Welcome. We have returned from Comicpalooza 2023. Yes. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. Welcome to the Rebel Radio Podcast. The podcast.
Yeah, we're Brooklyn.
Louisiana or Brooklyn.
Podcast.
The Rebel Radio Podcast. And this is Mark.
This is Matt.
And man, I apparently can't talk tonight. I don't know.
All tongue-tied.
Which isn't good because we have a lot to talk about. Man, this is kind of a milestone episode, our 350th. Anytime you hit those 50 marks, whether it's in comic books or counting, it's always like a milestone. You know, there's always that gigantic 50th issue or the gigantic 100th issue. And, you know, I've always done something. We've done the Indiana Jones films on the 50 marks at 150, 250, and now 350. Mm-hmm. And then we did Star Wars at the 100, 200, 300 marks. And it's given me a lot of thought as, man, you know, we already did the original trilogy. It's like, what's going to be our 400th episode? And I'm kind of leaning, it probably won't be Star Wars, but starting to come up with ideas. I mean, the more I think, that's only 50 episodes away. I got to start thinking about it because you want that
400. Oh, it'll come by quick.
That 400th episode, you want to be something special, you know, and, we've covered a lot of movies, but there's a lot of movies we haven't done as well. I'm sure there's something special it's just not hitting us right away that we haven't done that we can do for that 400th episode when the time comes. And, we've done a lot of special films from the director that we're covering today. This is our 11th Spielberg film we have covered.
Wow.
Easily the most of any director, without a doubt, that we've covered. And that just shows you how special of a director that he is. And we'll talk about that a little bit when we get to The Last Crusade here in a bit. And because it came up in our conversation at Comicpalooza, which we're going to talk about some more here in a minute as well. But how are you doing, man? Have you recovered? Man, Comicpalooza took me a couple days to kind of recover from all the walking. I worked Monday, and then I went to my brother's Monday for Memorial Day. And so Tuesday, man, I was just kind of flat out beat. I came home and rested, and same thing Wednesday, like 2 days in a row. I just came home and kind of rested and took a couple of naps.
Yeah. I felt like I needed one more day off, and I would have been good. And I'm kind of regretting not taking one day off, but I guess it's okay. I adjusted, but. Yeah, same thing, man. You know, you're walking around everywhere. And then, you know, if you go right back into your daily grind right afterwards, it's, it feels like, man, you just, flew through the weekend because you were, doing stuff.
Right. Well, that's it.
I feel like
fast.
You always need that. Yeah. You need that one leisure day, you know.
And a lot of times I take the Monday after off, but I didn't this year because I've got days I'm taking off later in the year. And, but, Comicpalooza, you get there and it's a whirlwind of excitement, conversations, good times. And so it does go by relatively paceful, but also quick. You know, you try to take it all in. And this was our 8th show we did at Comicpalooza. And, it's the 12 or 13 years I've been involved with Comicpalooza now. And then, they started the podcast program as a small thing. And now it's a big deal. And, and let's get into Comicpalooza a little bit, man. I'm a co-coordinator for the podcast program. So I'm on staff for Comicpalooza. And, my heart, and I've told you this and I'll reveal it on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And my heart wasn't all into it this year. I was kind of like, man, I'm just kind of not as into it as I used to be and everything, but I still did my part the best I could as a co-coordinator. And, but then I got there on Saturday and, a lot of those feelings start going out the door. You know, we arrived and we saw the podcast booth, which was incredible. Comicpalooza spent a little money this year to make a really nice booth with a cool table, which you can see those pictures on our Instagram and our Facebook group account. And, and it made you feel like you're part of something special. And then you run into old friends, whether it be Carrie and George and Dave from the Metal Geeks or Brandon and Randy and Rob, which we'll talk more about them from Cult 45 here in a little bit. And you just kind of get rejuvenated into things, run into Justin Corbett and Rob Zip and just people we know have been on our show and friends of ours. And it starts to rejuvenate you and you feel good about it. And you get that vibe. That's what's about the vibe, man. You get the vibe going, right? And And I want to talk more about Conclusion, but by the end of the weekend, by the time I left there Sunday, I felt rejuvenated and I felt really good about things. And I'm glad I'm involved with Conclusion. And next year, I think I won't feel as down about it. I don't know if down is the right word, but as not as into it. I think I realize how much I do enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
And some of that was personal, you know, issues I've dealt with in the last year that I think made me kind of feel a little down about this year, but I think I am rejuvenated. And that being said, man, let's rewind a little bit as we got the Compalooza and we got the excitement of it all. And you and I worked together at the booth this year, watching the booth and listen to some podcasts and things and enjoying the show floor a little bit too. And seeing some cool stuff and buying some cool stuff. And of course, before I get too far, Bing Chen of AMC's Comic Book Men, and I sell comics, and you know, part of Kevin Smith's crew, has been a major supporter of the Compalooza podcast.
Big time.
And he set up over there in his booth, and it's pretty cool that I'm on a first name basis with Bing now. He knows who I am, and he recognizes me. I even got a hug at the end of the weekend from him. You know, he said, man. He told me, bring it in, man. Let's hug until we see each other next time.
bring it in, baby.
Just an all-around cool dude, man, that supports podcasting and supports the program we do here in Houston at Conclusion. And so major props to him for being out there and supporting everybody. And he was taking pictures and talking to everyone and just having a real good time himself. And I was supposed to be on a panel Monday or Sunday morning with him. But I was running late and they had enough people up there already. So I just let them do their thing. It was a podcasting 101 panel, and that's okay. I don't mind. I've gotten a panel with Ming before. So, but just getting to hang with him was cool as hell. And just his support for the program. So we did our show at 2 o'clock, that Saturday, and I have not checked the audio yet. So I don't know if it came out or not, but we covered, the legacy of Indiana Jones, which we're going to talk about mm-hmm. more here in today's show. And we had fun talking about that and a good time. And we had some extra time because unfortunately, Brian from the BriFi podcast got sick and wasn't able to fill in his 3 o'clock slot. So we were asked to extend our time. And you and me were both kind of like, well, how are we going to do this? Because we're kind of running out of things to talk about. You know?
Yeah,
and
we had enough to fill our slot, you know, but not much to extend it. And luckily, you know, we, you know, got by with a little help from our friends, as Ringo Starr used to say.
Yeah. Brandon and Randy are come walking by, and Rob from the 3R show from Random Ramblings. And we're like, we invite them up on stage and why not? Because man, they are good friends and we love those guys. And Brandon and Randy and Rob came up there, and we kind of turned it in. It went from Indiana Jones to kind of a Q&A roundtable about our favorite different types of films and genres and things like that. And we had some laughs and some good times
and some audience interaction. That kid that came up, and man, he was I felt like he was nerding out. He was asking a lot of questions.
Definitely nerding out, you know,
he was engaging, you know, and it was, you know, what you would want from, you know, a podcasting panel.
Absolutely.
Very fun.
100%. It was a blast, man. It was one of the most fun live shows we've ever done. I'll just say it. Maybe my favorite, because I really like Rob and Randy and Brandon, and I love hanging with those guys. And it was just a good time. I really felt like in a moment there, I was taking all in. I know I don't think I said much when they were up there, but I was really just enjoying hanging with the guys and watching the audience and people laughing. And it was a lot of fun. And it went from me and Matt trying to figure out what the fuck are we going to do for another hour to just having an absolute blast.
Yeah.
One of the most fun moments I've ever had at Compalooza with those guys up there. It was good. And I can't thank Brandon and Randy and Rob enough for coming up there and hanging with us and making it a really special moment at the Compalooza podcast program this year.
It was cool that Rob, you know, he wanted his own panel, but he submitted it late and wasn't able to get in, and boom, right. You know, there he is. He got his shot and that was cool.
And the cool thing is about those guys, I mean, Rob has been on the show a couple of times. Brandon's been on the show. We still got to get Randy on. He wasn't able to make the Con Air episode that time with us, but we'll get him on one day.
That
was what was cool about it. I mean, then I did a panel on Sunday with supposed to be the future of Star Wars. It was me and George from Metal Geeks, and it was supposed to be a couple other panels that didn't show up. So Carrie ended up joining us. So me and Carrie and George did the panel about the future of Star Wars. And so, you know, and Carrie and George have both been on our show before, of course, as well. So, you know, it's like hanging with old friends, man. We may not see those guys throughout the year or hang with them all the time, but we always know we 100% got each other's backs. We support each other. And when you step back into that podcast program, and it's like hanging out with old friends. I mean, all those guys, you know, you feel like you get along with them all the time. And that's what's cool about it. It's truly become kind of a mini family at Comicpalooza with the podcasters and friends and stuff.
I agree with that. It's tight knit, you know?
Yeah. And before we get into more what we did at the show, I got to give props and thank yous to the rest of our podcast crew, to Jared and to Erica and Crimson and Scott for helping out and doing the things they do with the podcast program. Just major props to all those guys. And they're part of our team to make the podcast program what it is. And of course, Carrie for leading it all and making it happen. And his wife, Kim, you know, for doing their thing and making Comicpalooza a part of what it is. And JJ, I did not run into JJ this year, but he's been a major part of things too, and believing in the program and help having Carrie bring me back into the podcast program and things like that. So, you know, just a lot of fun out there, man. And I walked around, bought some shit, and I got a cool retro Star Wars, it's like a rifle, but it's like an old school carrying case from Return of the Jedi. You can put your figures in. Nice. I got a good deal on it from this guy from my vintage collection, and picked up a Robin figure from 1992's Batman Returns line, which is based on concept art of Marlon Wayans possibly being Robin. So Robin's got a high top.
I saw that.
But it's cool. And, you know, picked up a couple other little things here and there. I didn't buy a whole ton of stuff this year, but just enough to satisfy any nerd needs I had, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. Ran into, you know, a lot of friends. You know, Mark Nasso is out there always doing his thing and selling his art. And a few other people I've met out there over the years. And talked to Matt, who is the curator of the Houston Toy Museum. And he wasn't there when I went to the Houston Toy Museum. I went and talked to him and told him how much I really appreciated it. And he was just so grateful for, you know, the support. And I told him, I said, man, I tell people all the time, I told you, Matt, you need to take your kids out there. And just how cool that is that we have that museum in Houston, and just continue to support him and his awesome museum in the Heights over there.
It's a good time to go too. When the kids are out of school, I mean, you might as well.
He's running all kinds. He runs specials all the time to get the kids in good deals. But it's not even about the money, because it's worth it to support a small museum like that, because it's fucking cool as shit. So I ran to him. You know, went and checked out the 501st stuff. Always cool to see the Star Wars stuff, as always. You know, you know, it's all the cool NASA stuff. There's always so much to do at Comicpalooza. You can't even see it all. You know, it's impossible to see it all. I saw some cool decorated cars. My 8-year-old was excited about the Ghostbusters decorated car out there. So just a good time. I know you had some cool stuff you checked out too.
Yeah. I did get some artwork. There was a lady that had this very risque artwork of Elvira up there, Mistress of the Dark. And I had to get it, so I got that. And the wife got some Captain America art that she thought looked really cool, because it was like paint splatter art, and it was this cool little different type of art of him, you know, whenever he picks up the hammer in Endgame, and I thought it looked cool. It wasn't my favorite piece of art that artist had, but she liked it. We ended up picking it up, and I ended up doing whenever you volunteer, sometimes you get cool stuff, and I was able to get a free photo with the Buick from Ash versus the Evil Dead. It was actually used in the series, so I got to sit in the car, take pictures with it in front of it. Use the chainsaw prop, and they print you out a cool photo with Ash versus the Evil Dead on there, and the name of the prop on there, and I thought that was pretty cool, because I've sat in the Supernatural vehicle, and so the wife got to do that this time. We actually donated. We did not use the volunteer pass. So we, you can use volunteer pass, but we ended up donating because it went to veterans. They're running a veterans promo, a little fund this weekend. And so we went ahead and donated $30, and she got to do everything that you can do in that vehicle. Pick a couple weapons, like three weapons she was able to pick. Got multiple shots in the vehicle, and she picked up the Angel Blade, and that was her her tool of choice, and she loves Dean Winchester, and she picked it up and she posed with it, and the photographer was like, that was actually used. That one was actually used on set. Dean, the actor held that. I can't think of his name right now. I usually know his name.
She's not washed her hands since.
She was like, she's probably washed her hands since, but she was like, what he did? And just like, oh my God.
She's like, man, you ain't getting no love tonight. My hands. Uh-huh. Getting no love.
That's right. She's like, none until this has withered away. This feeling has withered away from my hand. But it was cool that she had a good time. And, she was like, at first I was going to go Sunday and I was going to take Jake, my oldest. But he acted like he didn't want to walk around a bunch. And so she's like, I'd like to go with you. And I'm glad she had some fun. I usually don't do a ton of photo op, autograph stuff. We've done one with Kristen Ritter before and we split it. And every year I'm like, I don't know. And, this time, especially after what happened with Jason David Frank, he was always there every year. And every year I was like, next year I'll do it. And kept saying that every year. And now he's gone. And, it made me think, and what you've told me too, with your Stan Lee experience, you didn't take it and you wish you did. Now you can't. And so it's like, when are they going to be back in town? Are they going to even be here to do that? So I went ahead and got a selfie with Jack Quaid, and I got him to sign my 25th anniversary official Scream mask, ghost face mask. And he thought it was cool because it still smelled like vanilla, just like it was fresh off the shelves from the Halloween store. And a couple people in front of me, got some stuff signed, and they were asking him questions, which was cool because I got to hear him. And they were some of the questions that I thought about asking. And one person had asked him what was his favorite scary movie. And he laughed and just said, I can't say. So it's got to be something other than Scream if it's not, if he couldn't say. So I'm thinking maybe he's a Nightmare on Elm Street guy or a Halloween guy. We don't know. I think he definitely likes one of the classics, but Scream is not his favorite. I know that because he would have said something. The next person asked if he was ever behind the mask in Scream. And he was once. And it's the scene that kind of mimics the original Scream, and where one of the victims is behind the couch. Because that person's in that legacy sequel supposed to be related to Jamie Kennedy's character. And it was the only time Scott Ulrich was behind the couch whenever Jamie Kennedy was sitting on it. So it was a meta thing. And I thought that was cool. And then I got to ask him a question, and I felt like I had a lame question. I thought it was a cool question at first. I was like, hey, so I know your dad's from Houston, but when's the last time, you've been here? And he's like, oh man, I used to come here all the time to go see my grandma, and then she passed away. And I was like, oh God, I suck. Making him think of his dead grandma. I was like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, man. And he's like, oh, it's okay. He's like, man, how should I sign this? he was like, man, maybe I should
write. Get this motherfucker out of here, man. Ask me these questions.
Yeah. So he signed, he wrote, "What's your favorite scary movie?" in an arc across the crown of the mask. And then in the mouth of the ghost face mask, he signed his name and wrote Richie in quotation marks, which is his, the name of the killer that he plays in Scream 5 that came out in 2020. So it was cool. It was cool, you know, being able to meet him. He's definitely a very cool guy. You know, some, it's cool getting autographs signed. I did also pay for a selfie with Colleen Klickenberg. She voiced Teen Gohan, Android 18, Kid Gohan, and, you know, did some other voices in Dragon Ball Xenoverse, Dragon Ball Z Kai, and some other animes. She plays Momo on My Hero Academia. And I went and talked to her a little bit and told her that, you know, one thing that I try to, you know, teach my son how to run, you know, cross country. He's going to be in cross country. And I always tell him, you know, at the end of your run, you should leave nothing on the field. And you need to act like Gohan when he goes Super Saiyan 2. And you just let it all loose. And she's like, you know, I get that a lot. She's like, from people that are athletes. She said that she gets those references specifically to that scene where they just have to like awaken and get to another level. And, you know, she, and I was like, well, you know, that's what being a Saiyan is all about in the Dragon Ball Z universe, finding that next level. Right. And she's like, yeah. She's like, thanks for sharing that. You know, I was like, you're welcome. And that was it. You know, so we had, she was talking a lot. So it was cool seeing her. And then, you know, my wife, you know, both of us watched The Boys, and, you know, she wanted a photo op and she wanted to have it with Starlight, and Starlight was there. And, we went ahead and did the photo op with Starlight. She seems like a very nice person. Of course, whenever you do the photo ops, they kind of like, all right, it's your turn. Step up.
Assembly line,
and yeah. Here you go. And all right, see ya. And she's like, oh, thank you for coming. And then she smiled. She had a piece of blue gum in the corner of her mouth, and she seemed a little nervous. So I was like, you know, I'm picturing her like getting ready for this photo op. I'm telling my wife, I said, what if she's like, do I smell bad? Yeah. I don't want to smell bad. I don't want my breath to smell bad. I have to say hi to these people and thank you. I don't want my breath smelling bad. So she's like super self-conscious. And even in her little promo videos for Comic Palooza, she seems a little nervous. So I thought that was kind of funny. You get a feel for these.
Some people are like that. Like when Cary Elwes there, Elwes is like that. He really gets nervous and doesn't really like, you know, all the attention. And that's why he was hidden. That's why he signed things behind a curtain and stuff. Some people are like that.
Wow.
You know, still sucks the car been canceled. Maybe he'll come back next year.
Man, dude, for real. You know, I was looking at Dallas Fan Expo and they've got Peter Weller. They've got Christina Ricci. You know, they're going to have, quite a few people. There's a couple other names I saw on there.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, it makes me almost want to drive 4 hours. I mean, Peter Weller,
Dallas is like such a shitty city,
$50 for Peter Weller. But yeah, driving to Dallas, you know, it's kind of rough. Yeah. We'll see. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think driving there next Friday, but I think oh, I've shit, had enough photo ops.
It's like, yeah. Nah. But it was a good Compalooza overall. I don't know where it ranks amongst Compaloozas, but I think as far as our live show goes, definitely one of the best. It was a lot of fun.
For sure.
And you know, but overall, man, it was a good time, and I'm sure we'll be back next year for our ninth show, and we'll be celebrating our own anniversary of the podcast next year, as we'll hit 10 years, I think, next year of podcast.
Yes, sir.
I think it's coming up next year.
2024.
So it's going to be a lot of fun, but, you know, it's behind us now. We move on. Hopefully the audio came out. If it did come out, I'll be releasing it as a little special episode I'll put together.
That'd be neat.
Actually, the reason I haven't checked it is I don't know where my SD card reader is. I have to find it I can plug the SD card into my computer and pull the audio. So that's part of my issue. I'm sure I'll find it. I just, that's why I haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
But so yeah, so Compalooza 2023, man, and it'll be back next year. I didn't see anything. The fact that they haven't announced the dates yet makes me wonder if it's not going to be Memorial Day next year. Maybe they'll be back in July or June like it was 1 year. Because usually when it's still Memorial Day weekend, they almost announce the dates right away, but they haven't yet. So we'll see. Let's move forward in our 350th issue and 350th episode. I did, amongst Compalooza, I did take a chance and I sat down and I finally watched Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania. I kind of agree with you and Long. I don't think it was as bad as the critics made it out to be. I don't think it's great either. It's okay. About the most important thing that came out of it was the formal introduction of Kang. And I know he was introduced in Loki, but this is a cinematic introduction. This is for the people that don't watch all the TV shows. I haven't seen all of Loki. So for me, this was my formal introduction to Kang. So I think that's the most important thing that came out of the film. There were some moments that were pretty well done. MODOK was weird. The Darren jokes kept getting a little kind of old after a while. I don't know why the CGI could not have been better on MODOK. It looks pretty bad in parts. So that was a bit distracting. But overall, it's fine. I mean, it's fine. It's what it is. It's not a terrible movie. I think I liked it better than the last Ant-Man movie, because that one was just a complete waste of 2 hours, really. Actually, the first two Ant-Man movies just aren't that great. They're okay. So this might be the best of the three. So maybe that's not saying much,
it's not saying much, but you're right. It is the best out of the three.
There is things like, okay, I know the blip happened. It's a few years later, but like all of a sudden Cassie's really smart. She's opening up the quantum realm. Wait, what? That was a little weird. Michael Douglas is just sort of there. He does nothing for the film except give information. It feels like a waste.
You had a second life?
Yeah, it feels like a waste of the original Ant-Man. Like, give him a fucking suit. Why does Jane get a suit? Give the original Ant-Man a suit. It's like,
that would have been cool.
That kind of annoys me. It's like, you have Michael Douglas, one of our great actors, and he's kind of wasted in this film as just a throwaway character. So there were things like that were a little bit noticeable, in the film. But like I said, it's fine. Whatever. I think at this point, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we need to get to Fantastic Four. We need to get to the X-Men, and we need another Spider-Man film. That's just what it is. I think that's what we need at this point. Now that you've moved on from the Avengers, we need the other big dogs. We need the Fantastic Four. We need the X-Men. To make this thing work. And I think that's just where it's at now in the MCU. And that's just true, but that's
that's a good point.
I mean, that's really all I've watched this week. I did, now that all the Indiana Jones films are on Disney Plus, I started watching a little bit of the first episode of Young Indiana Jones, but I didn't finish it because they have them put on there. Instead of putting them on there as like the original episodes, they put them on there as the ABC movies that were aired. But apparently the reason for that is because those are the most complete versions that Lucasfilm has in the archives. Okay. So it's basically two episodes or one movie. So that's why they're like an hour and a half each. So I watched one episode. So I watched half of the first movie. That's really all I watched this week, though. Just Ant-Man and Wasp.
Speaking about Marvel, we're on Marvel. I heard this little clip. There's this comedian. I don't know I know his face. I know his jokes. He's really good and he's newer. He came up in the last couple of years and, he was talking about how Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is James Gunn's, portrayal of what Marvel did with him. See, so Marvel hires James Gunn. He does Guardians of the Galaxy. We all know that. And then Marvel movies changed after that. They started introducing more humor, have a little bit of heart in there. And that was kind of the mold for every movie to carry on past that. Sometimes we got, extreme humor, Thor Ragnarok, or extreme goofiness, Thor Love and Thunder. But for the most part, it kind of changed how Marvel did their movies after that, you know, whether or not, you know, they took inspiration from it. I think they did. But anyways, they cut him loose because of the whole, you know, his previous comments being brought up again. And then they realize they can't do it without him. They bring him back. And you've got the High Evolutionary, right? The High Evolutionary is trying to create this perfect society. And he has a creation, Rocket, who's able to do something that he's not able to do because of his own independent thinking, like James Gunn did. You know, they hire James Gunn. He's able to do something different with his own independent thinking. And then once he loses, he loses Rocket, he has to get him back because he has to duplicate the only thing Rocket can duplicate. And that's this perfect society, this perfect cinema, in a sense, James Gunn, this better cinema. So I was like, that's perhaps a pretty cool theory.
I think it's also probably wildly coincidental because Gunn for years had his own outline for what the three films were going to be.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why I think it's pretty highly coincidental, you know, because yeah. I mean, he had rumors. There were rumors he had pretty much the Guardians 3 script written way before he even got fired.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, it had to have jacked everything up because Adam Warlock was probably supposed to have a more prominent role.
Maybe, you know, I mean, we don't know. I mean, I think that's highly coincidental. I also think that was another thing I thought was weird. Like Ant-Man 3 felt like it was trying to be like Guardians, a lot of weird characters and stuff. And I'm like, aliens. It was just bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little weird in places. Like the guy with holes. It's like, what?
Oh yeah.
Like, it was just weird. I don't know.
Drink me. The drink me guy.
Paul, I tell you one thing I do appreciate from Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Is that how you say his last name?
Right.
Is that he, for doing a lot of green screen acting, I do think he's pretty fucking good at facial expressions. Like the looks on his face sometimes are just like, are pretty spot on considering he's looking at nothing. Rudd's pretty good at that. You know, sometimes you can see with actors, their reactions don't feel like the greatest, but he's pretty good, man, having these right facial reactions for the moment considering he's looking at green screens. You know, so I can appreciate him for that.
I definitely like that aspect of him. His physical expression being able to, you know, make that definitely with his comedy for sure. I think he's pretty good at bringing that aspect to it. But yeah, being able to, you know, react to something that's not there. You know, it's a sheet, you know, that's pretty impressive.
So, I mean, you look at that film, it had to be 80% green screen because it all takes place in the quantum realm.
Yeah. There ain't no way that those sets were built or had matte paintings. No. Definitely not. I did try to watch Shazam Fury of the Gods and I watched about half of it and it was kind of late. I fell asleep. But what I watched of it, I didn't think it was bad.
Yeah, it's fine.
I forget if it got bad reviews or anything. It's fine. Yeah. You know, I wasn't blown away. Yeah, but I was, you know, I was entertained, you know, from what I did watch. So hopefully I can finish it and have a better review. But other than that, that's really it.
No more Babylon 5.
I didn't do much. I didn't get to it. You know, usually I watch it on Sundays, and this time I wasn't able to.
Kids kind of project for this summer
took over the TV. Oh yeah, I'm gonna have to keep on it. Watch, you know, those episodes. They ain't as long as Cobra Kai episodes. They're like three times as long. So
yeah,
it's gonna take a minute to get through that first season.
Well, let's do a little bit of news before we get to the featured film. It looks like there's a report coming out that the Batman 2 might be delayed filming from November until March of next year. And the rumor is it's because of the writer's strike. I don't understand quite what the writer's strike does. Like if the script is written and the film's ready to go, are some of these directors delaying their projects because they support the writer's strike? That's the only thing I guess I can figure.
Yeah. You know, maybe
because
that's
like,
why.
Like Deadpool 3 moved forward with filming. But then I read too, it also is an issue with like, if there's something that needs to be fixed in the script as it goes along, they can't do it without a rider that's, the rider would have to not be part of the Writers Guild, I guess.
Yeah.
And now it doesn't have any rumor that the film's going to, we already have to wait till 2025 for this film anyway. So there's no word that it's going to delay the film or anything. Just might push filming back a few months. Which I hope not too far, because I'm really looking forward to the Batman Part 2. And we talked about how Marvel needs needs the big dogs in this new universe, and Sony's Amy Pascal has said that they are actively developing Spider-Man 4 with Marvel Studios. So we know it's coming. You know, it's funny, when Marvel released their list of the current phase of films last year, everyone's like, well, where's the next Spider-Man? It's not on there. So I'm thinking later this year at either San Diego Comic-Con or D23, whatever event it is, I'm thinking we'll get a updated list of Marvel films. And I would think that Spider-Man 4 is going to be on there, because, you know, everyone wants to know what happened to Peter after No Way Home and losing his memory, or not losing his memory, people forgetting him, I should say.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to let's get Spider-Man 4 happening, because I think the MCU needs Spider-Man right now.
Yeah, they've only given us one movie, and that's Fantastic Four next November, and that's right.
Well, the Marvels is coming out. There's something coming out. Next the spring. Marvels. Can't remember what it is, but yeah, there's stuff coming. McFarlane Toys has renewed their license with DC and Warner Brothers properties for the foreseeable future. It's been one of the number one selling toy lines for superhero toys the last few years. And, you know, McFarlane makes incredible stuff. His sculpts are
big time,
uncanny. The figures are awesome. They look great on the shelf, in or out of the box. He makes fantastic stuff. So this is good news for toy collectors and fans of the DC universe figures that he does. So we get more of those. I'm still looking for a Michael Keaton Batman. I haven't seen any of the Flash movie figures on the shelf yet. There were a few floating around Comppalooza, but I wasn't going to pay the ridiculous prices they were asking, because I know these things will be out on the shelf soon enough. And if you missed Avatar: The Way of Water in theaters, you only have to wait till next week. It's coming to Disney Plus. I think next Wednesday it'll be on Disney Plus. June 7th. So you can sit and watch the 3-hour movie and take your own pee breaks and pause it whenever you want, because it is a long movie. I think I went twice. That was a long movie for me in the theater.
Same here.
So next week that will hit Disney Plus. All right, man. Well, let's get into our today's feature film, man. This is a franchise that is no secret to anybody. Indiana Jones came out in 1981 with Raiders of the Lost Ark, and we covered that for episode 150. And for episode 250, we covered Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So for our 350th episode, of course, today, we're going to conclude the original trilogy of Indiana Jones films with Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And, here in a few weeks, we're getting Indy's final adventure with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And I'm definitely looking forward to that. We talked at Comppalooza, I'm paying no attention to what any critics said. I'm going to go into this film and I'm going to go enjoy it, because I know I'm going to enjoy it just like I did The Crystal Skull. And looking forward to Dial of Destiny. And I'm not going to let critics keep me from going and seeing it. But for today, we're going to talk the film that came out in 1989 to wrap up, at the time, what we thought was the final Indiana Jones film. Indiana Jones: The Last Crusade is as good as, Raiders is always going to be my favorite, but Last Crusade's almost as good as Raiders in a lot of ways. Temple of Doom went a little dark, a little bit more supernatural, where Last Crusade goes back to the roots of what Raiders of the Lost Ark was, where it has supernatural elements to it, but it's also grounded in a reality as this adventure hero, like Raiders of the Lost Ark was. And, and we're introduced to his father with Sean Connery as his character. Nazis are back, wreaking havoc and causing problems as Indiana gets involved in a quest, not by choice, but his father goes missing. So he gets pulled in to go look for the Holy Grail, the Cup of Christ, and which was an obsession of his father's, and Indiana didn't necessarily really believe in it. Yeah, he believed they were more bedtime stories. His archaeology at this point was, Indiana had seen things he couldn't quite believe, but he did try to keep his archaeology grounded in reality, things that he knew existed. And he didn't quite believe in the Ark of the Covenant, even though he didn't quite believe in stones that would make a man's possessed. And he didn't quite believe in the Grail, but yet he gets pulled into this quest to go find his father And he starts, the funny thing about this film is, it's almost got a background about faith. Indiana's faith in the grill and the, and things gets stronger throughout this film, because he starts believing it. You know, he realizes maybe there is something there, and he believes that, he realizes that his father wasn't crazy, or not crazy, wasn't obsessed. And you know, you get, you know, Spielberg doesn't get too into the meat of relationships in this film, because it's an adventure film, but you know, you get the idea that Henry and his son's relationship is strained, you know, over the years, but throughout this film, their relationship strengthens, you know, that, so yeah, it never really occurred to me how much Last Crusade is a father-son film as much as it is an adventure action film. And it's a good one in so many ways. It's got humor. It's got some great set pieces with great chases and action elements, and a really great story to boot. And this is a movie that, I mean, the first time I saw this, I probably saw it in theaters in 1989. I don't remember exactly. Indiana Jones has been something that's been part of my life as much as Star Wars has. And it's just a very important franchise, important film to me. When do you maybe remember first seeing The Last Crusade?
Ooh, man, I think maybe I was 10 years old, 10, 11. So yeah, I definitely saw this, 99, or I mean, sorry, not 99, 96, 97, definitely around there, when it had, you know, started circulating on TV a bit. That's whenever I know I think I saw all of them like that. You know, they would just kind of rotate, Temple of Doom, Raiders, and then Crusade. And I remember this one. I always remember the chases. There's a lot of course, there's always a good chase in most of these indie films. That's one of the things, you know, you can always remember about them, the chases. And this one is, you know, doesn't disappoint, of course, with the motorcycle chase over, you know, it was filmed on Skywalker Ranch. I rewatched that scene again before we recorded, just because they're just, you know, they throw this confusion with the boat, you know, and then they take off, and then Nazis are like, wah, you know, and then four motorcycle Nazis are chasing them. And, man, just such a great scene. And it's one of those movies that just doesn't disappoint. And I think, like you said, it's because the, you know, the director wanted to go back to the roots of what made the series great. And, you know, with $48 million, I think they did that. They did just that. It's, you know, it's shot great. The effects are really cool. The you know, puppets that they use to change, the bad guy, I forget his name, but he was the, you know, the guy that was in Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back as, one of the admirals. He you know, drinks from the cup and starts aging backwards. And, they made like, I think they made like 15 puppets or something to, for each stage. And it's so Walter horrifying. Donovan's looking.
Character's name. Yeah.
Yeah. Donovan. And it's terrifying. It's like that scene from Spider-Man 3 where the woman turns into the cyborg, and it's pretty freaky. And they do a good job with their special effects. You know, from the boat at the beginning, to the end scene. And you're right. This is a father and son film. And it's a film about faith, as well as he has to walk the path of God, and the name of God, and then of course the leap of faith as the third test. Mm. You know, so very very cool stuff in this film.
Yeah, considering it was very close, but Lucas really wanted the third Indiana film to be a horror film. He wanted to deal with Indiana going into a haunted mansion, deal with the macabre. And things like that. And Spielberg was like, you know, I don't really want to do a, you know, a dark film. He had
ghosts.
He had just produced Poltergeist. And, you know, he was like, you know, I want
to. Didn't want to have to do another ghost film.
You know, and he felt Temple of Doom was already dark enough. And, you know, and so it was more Spielberg that turned this into going back to the roots of Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, and it would have been interesting, though, to have an Indiana Jones deal with the dark arts. But, you know, it wasn't meant to be. But I think they made the right choice by going the direction they did, because it's also such a perfect bookend to Raiders, which also deals with the ideas of the relics of Jesus Christ, and the Ark of the Covenant was believed to hold the Ten Commandments. So I think it's a perfect book into that movie. One thing I really love about this movie is just Sean Connery and Harrison Ford and the way they play off of each other. You know, Harrison, I love the scenes where he's laughing, killing the bad guys. His dad just looking at him like, you know, no, this isn't fun. You know, why, you know,
he's just trying to hold on to his bag the whole time.
Yeah. And trying to figure out like, why would you let the boat go? And he's like, just come on, dad. And just so many great moments like that in this movie that makes this movie work on such a level, even more than just a great story.
No, the comedy that they interject, and it just flows so smooth. It's not forced. And you're just having a great time with the adventure. And, they put that, some of that stuff in there, pretty well timed, like the rats falling through the top of the tomb that they have to flip on themselves.
And they brought in two
secret organization.
They brought in like 20,000 rats for that scene. Ooh, they brought in.
Damn it. Then now they have the budget for rats.
Right.
But yeah, you've got that. It's and it's almost kind of comedic with the rats crawling on I can never get the female's name right.
Elsa.
Elsa, who I guess both the father and the son, Henry and Indy had a go at, and which was pretty funny. She's just trying to get these things off of her, and he's like, "I'll be right back. Hang tight." And he leaves her there with the rats just falling all over. Stuff that's probably not supposed to be funny. But whenever he gets the book back from Elsa at the book burning, and Adolf Hitler's walking by and he bumps into Hitler, right, and he has to pretend, like, act like he wants his autograph. He signs his dad's book. And I thought that was pretty funny. Takes place in 1938. So of course, they're celebrating one of Hitler's famous, little shindigs, I guess, he used to throw in the middle of the street, brings out the whole military, and kids are burning books.
It's funny because there are people that, very little, it's a very small minority that have a backlash against the Indiana Jones films, saying that they, are sexist to women, which I don't really think Indiana treats women that bad in any of the movies. And also you bring up that scene saying that they glorify a time in history that was horrible. Well, no, Indiana's fighting Nazis. And yes, Hitler's a horrible man. I don't think anyone doubts that. But that scene is played for kind of a humorous laugh, and it's not, I don't think it's meant anything for it, you know. But I've read where people don't like that scene because they said, oh, how could he get a signature from Adolf Hitler? Well, first off, he's undercover. So he's not going to blow his cover.
Yeah.
Second, the scene, I don't think anyone looked at that scene anything than being humorous back in 1989. But there has been people that have mentioned that, like, that they'll, that because of the Indiana Jones films. And it makes you wonder, could they have filmed that today? I think so. I think it wouldn't have played any differently.
Yeah.
You know, people just need to quit being sensitive pussies about things.
Exactly.
You know,
look at the context, you know. It's not like they made Indiana Jones this Hitler fan. And he's right. Like, oh, my Führer, right, signing my book. Yeah,
he's not over there, bowing before him or anything like that.
Exactly. He's just trying to blend in. He doesn't want to get caught. He's not going to slug the guy in the face, and because then the movie would just end right there.
Yeah,
he'd shoot him.
I also like the little things in the film, like where he tells him, "Oh, Marcus will blend in. You will never find him." And, you know, then he's like, oh, he got lost in his own museum. And the next scene we see Marcus, like, hello, does anybody speak English? Can you help me? You know, and it's like, I like the little things like that. Then, of course, Sala comes along. We get to bring John Rhys Davies back in this one as Sala, and he helps Marcus out. And it was interesting because Denholm Elliott, who plays Marcus, was sick through much of filming this. He had been diagnosed with AIDS, and we would hang on to him for about three more years. But ultimately, AIDS would end up taking him in 1992. But he was pretty sick for most of this, but he didn't want to miss out on the chance of being in the Indiana Jones film again. So he was a trooper and he went out there and filmed his part. And, but there's some great moments with him in Indiana, and he gets a great line at the end. Follow me, Indiana, Dr. Jones. I know the way. And he takes off. He's like, I lost his homies. Yep. You know, and it's always great to see Solo. That's one thing I'm looking forward to Dial of Destiny is getting to see Solo on screen again, too, and bringing him back. Because when I saw Kingdom of Crystal Skull, my first thought was like, where's Solo? You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, why is he not in this film? You know, and you know, they mentioned, Sean Connery and Dr. Jones and Marcus and Crystal Skull that they had passed, but they don't mention Solo at all. And so it's good that he's coming back. So that'll be good to see him again.
Very light. Brings a nice lightheartedness and, you know, upbeat comedic effect to the film for sure.
Oh yeah. Well, just like at the end, when the fantastic tank chase towards the end of the film, and Indiana's getting dragged along by tanks fighting the Nazis, and the tank goes off the edge, and Indiana looks like he was off the edge too, and he gets up and he's looking over the edge with Marcus and Sala and Henry Jones Sr., and they think they lost Indiana, and he's like, oh, and then he falls over and they're all ready to go, and his dad's like, what are you sitting down for? It's time to go. And Indiana's like, man, I fell off a cliff. This was really funny because like a father would do that. Like, what are you doing, son? Let's go.
Yeah. What are you doing sitting around? Get your ass up. Yeah.
Yeah. And,
And then they make it, and, you know, make it to the tomb.
It's some cool legends in here. The whole legend of the Grail and the knights protecting it from the Arthur legend. And I thought all that was really well handled. As Indiana is forced to go through the traps and booby traps as his father, they shoot his father. So he knows finding the cup of Christ and the water of everlasting life is the only way to save his dad. So he's put through this ultimate challenge at the end of the film to save his father. And it's all really well done and it's exciting. And it's got, you know, you just go through this entirely intense chase sequence. But the climax of the film is actually a little more scaled down as Indiana has to go through these challenges to save his dad. But it works so well, you know, and it's a really well done film. And it's real similar. Again, it bookends Raiders. Raiders has this climactic chase sequence. And then the climax of the film is Indiana and Marion tied up while the Nazis open up the Ark of the Covenant and they all get wiped out while Indiana and Marion close their eyes, you know, after this climactic chase scene. And we didn't even talk about the beginning of this film where the late, great River Phoenix plays a young Indiana. And we get to see some origins, like how he discovered the whip, how he gets his hat,
A scar.
Yeah, I got a scar. Lots of great little moments in the movie. And in fact, it inspired George to write the Young Indiana Jones series. And they even asked River to reprise the role, but he just didn't want to do television because he had been moving on to film acting. Ultimately it went to Sean Patrick Flannery. You know, a lot of people forget that too. There is actually, everyone goes, well, Harrison's the only guy who can play Indiana. There's actually been five actors that have played Indiana Jones. And people forget that because there has been the young boy who plays a child Indiana Jones, Sean Patrick Flannery, River Phoenix. There's an older gentleman who narrates part of the Indiana Jones story, plays Indiana Jones. And then of course, Harrison Ford himself. So, you know, there's actually been five different actors that have played the role, in the films or television. So a lot of people don't know that. It's a little unknown fact about Indiana Jones.
Interesting to point
out. That's why back in the day when they were talking about, you know, recasting Indiana Jones, people were like, oh, you can't do that. It's Harrison Ford. Well, at the time, I always thought, why can't? You've had five different actors who can play him. I mean, why can't? Now, as Harrison's gotten older, it's his legacy. I'm kind of like, we talked about this at Compalooza. I don't think you should recast him now. I think it's fine where it's at. Maybe, you know, it just needs to be left alone. And, you know, like I said, we're going to do adventures, maybe an animated adventure, maybe Short Round. You know, I always thought, like, you know, why not strike while the iron's hot with Ki Hu Kwan? You know, do an Adventures of Short Round series, you know, continue on the Indiana Jones legacy in a way like
you
that.
Might as
that
well.
Would be really cool.
Especially since he got an Oscar, you know, and he's had this great resurgence.
And, you know, and I'm getting off a little bit of a tangent there about the cast of Indiana Jones, but it's something we brought up at a Con Blues. We also talked about is Spielberg our greatest director ever live? And it's at this point, it's really hard to say no. I mean, I think we mentioned Scorsese, you know, are the top two of our time. And you can go back in time. You can argue like Glenn Ford, who directed all those Westerns, and Sergio Leone, those guys, they're great too. But ones that lived in our time, it's hard to not say Spielberg or Scorsese is one and two, you know.
Yeah, especially with how much success Spielberg has had. I mean, almost everything that the man touches is an iconic film that you can rewatch and still enjoy. And you know, he's got every, you know, these Indiana Jones films are a perfect example of that. You know, you've got quotes, you know, quotableness, you've got, you know, a story that's rewatchable, a theme that is very entertaining, and, you know, tons of, you know, special effects that, you know, didn't have to use green screen for a lot of them, which, you know, the Zephyr in this film, I believe is a matte painting, and you can kind of see that line that mm-hmm. separates the matte painting, and the blimp. But it's okay. It's dated, but I think it even pops out even more on the Blu-ray DVD.
Well, yeah, the ultra 4K on the Disney Plus, you can tell. It's just like even Raiders, you know, the whole ball running through the temple at the beginning is all done with miniatures. And you can tell that it's a superimposed in Harrison Ford running through, and it still looks that way the year. So, but it still holds up well too for the time. Yeah. But you, if you on the 4K sometimes brings out those things a little bit more where you can see them, you know, but it is what it is. You know, interesting thing is, you know, Sean Connery was always Spielberg's first choice, but Connery kept saying no for a bit. You know, he wasn't sure if he wanted to do it. It was almost, mm-hmm. they almost had Gregory Peck as a backup playing his father. But Sean, it ultimately worked out because, you know, Spielberg, the whole reason he got involved with Indiana Jones is he wanted to make a Bond film. And George was like, you know, everyone knows the famous story about them on the beach together. And George was like, you know, I have something better. I have Indiana Jones, and Spielberg's like, okay, let's do this. And, but as it turned out, you know, there is a lot of similarities to Indiana and James Bond as far as adventurous hero and the women and, you know, things like that. And Spielberg got to work with, a lot of cast members that have been in Indiana Jones films by doing these, or been in James Bond films, I should say, by doing these Indiana Jones films. So in a way, Spielberg never made a Bond film, and maybe he will one day, you know, we never know, but he still ended up making what is arguably the greatest adventure hero of all time. I think he's my number one adventure hero of all time. I think as much as I enjoy Bond, I think Indiana Jones is always going to be number one in my heart and something that's heavily influenced me in my life. And I think he is the number one adventure hero to ever be created.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's fair. I mean, you've got, you know, Raiders is probably on. I mean, we talked about this. Raiders is a movie that's, you know, a lot of people's top fives, definitely a lot of people's top 10 of films. And it's, you know, a big part of that is because of the character of Indiana Jones. You know, he's a little bit of a scoundrel, but mm-hmm. he's got, you know, he's good, not because he wants to be a hero, but just simply because he just is, you know.
Yeah.
He never tries to be that hero. But he just simply is. And I think, I was trying to draw conclusions or draw lines from, Indy to The Mummy. And it's just, you know, I told, you know, my wife, she loves Brendan Fraser and she loves The Mummy, but I'm like, you know, I said, he doesn't happen without Indy. I said, Indy's the blueprint, you know, at Brendan Fraser, his portrayal just, you know, he tries a little bit harder to be a hero, than Indy, even though he, you know, we'll go back and say, you know, hey, you know, I don't want to have to do this, but, you know, he becomes the hero and acts like it. He's protecting the woman. I feel like he's, you know, and then you've even got the secret sect of people that don't want to find the Mummy's book. And you've got the secret sect of people that don't want any to find the Ark. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, both movies are meant to look like the old serials. So, you know, Indy, you know, people plagiarize for a reason. That's because, you know, Indy is the mold. He's the mold for the homage, action hero.
I guess you could say. Yeah. And, you know, we talk about Spielberg being a great director. I mean, imagine Harrison Ford. I mean, we have no doubt he's one of our great movie stars of all time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how many actors are known for two major franchises? I mean, he's going to be remembered as Han Solo and as Indiana Jones. And no one's going to dispute which one is greater, which one's great, because they're two great roles. And
yeah,
I was really trying to think of another actor that's done that. And I couldn't think of one that's had two such iconic roles, as this, You know, I mean, just, I mean, there's been actors like Tom Hanks that have won many Oscars and been in iconic movies and roles, but I'm talking
maybe,
I'm talking
maybe franchises. Stallone, Rocky and Rambo.
But is Rambo as memorable as Rocky? You know, I did think about that, you know, but because most people, when they say Stallone, are going to say Rocky, they're not going to say Rambo. Or if you ask someone, what's Harrison Ford's most memorable role? Some people might say Indiana Jones. Some people might say Han Solo. You might get two different answers.
Yeah.
But with Stallone, almost 10 out of 10, they're going to say Rocky. You know, you're not going to get those two different answers, you know? So that's, you're absolutely though right, Matt. He was the first one I thought about.
Yeah.
And Stallone's done a couple, but in Rambo also has not been nearly as successful as a franchise as Rocky has or Star Wars or Indiana Jones. You know?
Yeah, and it's hard to name anyone else because I feel like everyone's got one. They've got the one, you know.
But to have two major franchises, it's no one else I can think of, you know, and that's huge. I mean, Harrison's one of our greats, man, and I can't wait to see Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny in a few weeks. I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, we're going to have two out of 3 weeks here with The Flash and Indiana Jones looks like a couple of great movies. And this coming weekend, you know, Spider-Man's coming out. So, I mean,
yeah,
June should be a good month of movies. You know, I'll be seeing Spider-Man on Monday, I think. Looks like that's my plan. And
Monday for me too.
Kids go see it. And, but I'm looking forward to that. But I mean, I really just cannot wait for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And it's been fun covering all three of these films. You know, we did Raiders of the Lost Ark and Temple of the Doom. And now, for 350, covering Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which is by all rights, is just as good as Raiders. But I think Raiders just holds that special place in my heart for being the original film. But yeah. Last Crusade's really good too. I mean, you know, it really is. It's a 10 out of 10 film also, just like Raiders is. I mean,
you big know, it's time.
Almost flawless. And such a great franchise. And it's going to be a bit bittersweet to see it end here in a few weeks with the fifth film. But I'm also going to go in and enjoy the heck out of it.
Heck yeah, man. It's going to be just like watching really any other Indiana Jones film. I expect, you know, big consistency with this one. It looks fun. It looks like Harrison's back, and that's what I hope to see.
Yeah, there's a fun little clip on Disney Plus right now, a special look. It's got about a 2-minute clip with a little trailer added to the end of it. And then I watched that, and it just kind of got my blood pumping. Like, all right. Let's go, June 30th, Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom. But before we get to Temple of Doom and the Dial of Destiny. But before we get to the Dial of Destiny, we've got a few more movies to cover this month before we get there. And next week we're going to go into another franchise that's been very successful, and that is the Transformers franchise. Love it or hate it, it's been very successful at the box office. Mm-hmm. And we covered the first Transformers, and we're kind of, for now, going to skip the other ones. And we're going to cover what's arguably the other really good Transformers film, and that is the spinoff that came out just a couple years ago, directed by Travis Knight, and that's Bumblebee.
I'm Charlie Watson. I'm 18. Today, actually. Is the Beetle for sale?
Yours, kid. Happy birthday.
Oh my God. What are you?
So you have no idea where he came from?
No idea. Here's the deal. People can be terrible about things they don't understand. From now on, the only person you can show yourself around is me. Oh, I'm good. Now I'm good, thanks.
There's a war raging on our planet. If this criminal isn't found, that war may find its way here.
Is there anyone that can help you? Do you have a family? Me.
They're calling an army.
I've seen firsthand these things really are.
will be. There is only one way to end this war. You must protect Earth and its people.
Take it down!
My back, V!
This is how we stop them. You've got me. And I'm not going anywhere.
And you know, this is a fun Transformers film. It's entertaining. It's good. It's not overly pretentious and ridiculous as some of the other ones are. It's got the great Haley Steinfeld in it. Good special effects. It's got John Cena in a non-annoying role in one of the best lines in a Transformers film, which we'll talk about next week. But it'll be a fun one to talk about. It's got a true Generation One Optimus in it. Some really cool scenes on Cybertron. You know, Rise of the Beast has come out in theaters, and I think I'm going to make the choice to wait till it hits Paramount Plus in about a month, probably, since Paramount Plus seems to get things quickly. So I think I will wait for Rise of the Beast, since there's other things coming out I want to see, but those are going to see Rise of the Beast. We'll get you ready by talking Bumblebee next week, on the show. And you know, Bumblebee was a pleasant surprise when it came out, better than I thought it would be. So,
oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely a fresher take, and you know, versus what we have got. We got in like The Last Knight, right? I think that was the last film before Bumblebee. Mm-hmm. You know, which I did like Mark Wahlberg, you know, as you know, the main human. Yeah, it was different than Shia LaBeouf. You know, I liked him, but you know, you know, I guess they weren't going to carry on with him.
I mean, so, let's just be honest. When it comes to these Transformers films, we would like to have one where there's no humans at all and just robots fucking fighting each other.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be pretty badass.
And we'll probably never get it because they have to make money and they pay actors. They want actors in the film. But God dang, it would be cool as shit to have a Transformers film with no humans. You know? So.
Well, now, supposedly, Optimus Prime reached out to Dominic Toretto.
Anyway, and we move on. But, you know, thank you to, again, to Comicpalooza for having us at the show this year. And we had a good time. And,
great time.
Thank you all for our support and listening to us and anyone that listened to the show at Comicpalooza or came out to watch us. But you can find everything at therebelradiopodcast.com with all your Rebel Radio needs, our social medias, and links to all where you can find the podcast. And, we thank you as always for listening, man. Just continue to be safe out there. And until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And again, like I said, thank you for listening. Remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.